Blog Talk Radio.
No matter if you're a startup organization or you've been around in business 5 years, 10 years, or maybe 20 or 30 years, you've got a business story that we'd like to hear. Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show. If you'd like to be featured on TBFS Radio, please go to our website, thebusinessforumshow.com, and click on the link for Request an Interview. Again, the website is thebusinessforumshow.com. Or you can call our studios at 763-267-7260. Get in contact with us today. We'd love to hear your story. Kevin Hunter with Jeff O'Brien here on the Business Forum Show, and we're going to talk about worker classifications in organizations. And I'll tell you what, Jeff, I have seen a lot of companies make this mistake of failing to create proper distinction between a contractor and an employee.
Yeah, Kevin, it's a very common mistake. It's a very common issue that arises for a business of any size, because the consequences of whether or not somebody is an independent contractor or an employee matter a lot to a company's bottom line. You have whether or not you have to pay withholding tax. You have issues of what benefits you have to provide. Do they have to be part of the 401k plan, or if you're doing something like that for your employees, do you have to worry about complying with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Family Medical Leave Act, and on and on and on. So it has huge consequences if you make the wrong, if you decide that if you put them in somebody in one box and the IRS decides they're in another box, or the Department of Labor at the federal or state level decides they should be in another box.
So really the failure that we're talking about here isn't the fact that employers are calling contractors employees, but it's the fact that they're calling employees contractors.
Yep, that's the big issue, and the IRS doesn't make it easy. They do have a test for deciding whether or not someone is an independent contractor or an employee and how they should be classified, and they have 20 factors in that test. But we can boil it down. A lot of it boils down to the level of control that the employer exerts over the worker. If you have a requirement that the person has to be on site within certain hours during the day and doing certain things, that sounds more like an employee. If you've got, say, you're somebody helping you with some marketing that's doing it from their home along with a number of other clients, that sounds a lot more like an independent contractor. And the real tricky issue a lot of times gets into the salespeople. Are they employees, or are they contractors? And again, we look at that control test. I had a situation one time where I had a client that had an independent sales representative agreement, and when they left the company, tried to enforce a non-compete and some other things, and we pointed out that there was a requirement that they attend weekly meetings under penalty. And, hey, we haven't seen any of those employment benefits like the 401k contributions like you've done for all your other employees. So maybe you should back off on us taking a few customers with us, and we won't make a big deal about this.
Sure.
We never heard from them again. So, like I said, it has very serious consequences if you misclassify somebody.
I've seen situations, Jeff, where organization had employees classified as contractors and yet have given them an employee handbook, have also required weekly reporting of all, so they're basically reporting on all their activities, where they were, what they did, everything else. And, yeah, there was a office expectation as well. And I look at these 20 different factors that you're talking about with the IRS, and how many of these does somebody have to actually fit of the 20 factors before the IRS says, this is definitely employee? And are some things more important than others on there?
No, employer does not have to meet all 20 factors, nor is any one of the factors dispositive. It's going to be a facts and circumstances looking at the situation as a whole in determining whether or not somebody is in one criteria or the other. I'll give you a few ideas. Now, a lot of this comes up too with somebody that maybe is running a consulting practice and they don't want to be qualified as an employee because, mm-hmm. you know, and so I get a lot of clients that come to me that I set them up as an S corporation or an LLC
mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot, it shows that distinction that you're working for yourself rather than for someone else.
Sure.
And you're in that contractor relationship. Of course, having a, you know, having an entity and having a contract between the entity and whatever company you're doing work for is another way to show that you are not an employee of someone, that you're an independent contractor. In some industries, it's required that you have a separate entity. You know, you mm-hmm. look at in here in Minnesota with the in the construction trades industry with the independent contractor exemption certificate. If you mm-hmm. are a subcontractor working on, say, working for a contractor on a construction of a house, mm-hmm. for example, if you aren't if you don't have an LLC or an S-Corp or some kind of entity set up for yourself, you are deemed by law to be an employee of the contractor, and the contractor has to pay workers' comp insurance mm-hmm. On your behalf. In this state, everybody got a little tired of people falling off roofs and on cash jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the DLI, the Department of Labor and Industry, you know, asked to have, you know, push for that law, and it was passed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an example of a civic industry where you have no choice. And I know of clients of mine that are contractors that have insisted that their subcontractors go out and file and become an LLC or an S corporation because they did not want to be responsible for paying their workers' comp insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why you want to have somebody classified properly, because that's another one of those employee-related expenses you're going to have if somebody is properly classified as an employee.
Now, I have my own ideas on this subject, Jeff, but why do you think, from a legal standpoint, why do you think employers attempt to create this contractor classification as opposed to taking the person on as an employee?
It specifically because of the cost involved with carrying an employee. We talk, you know, we're sitting here and everybody's worried about, you know, what the cost, the rising cost of health care and everything else,
mm-hmm.
all those employee benefits, the 401k, and then the liability.
Mm-hmm.
I always joke and say, you know, when I get a client that comes to me with an employment law question, I very quickly get it down the hall to my partner, Stacy DeKalb, because I always joke and say that common sense and the employment laws don't always parallel each other.
Mm-hmm.
What you may think makes sense isn't what the law says. And so mm-hmm. you need to have somebody like Stacy, who's well-versed in all the employment laws, federal and state, and can properly advise as to whether it be someone needs to be disciplined, someone needs to be terminated. It can be a real mess if you violate those laws. That's why the employers just say, hey, the easiest way out of it is not to be an employee. So that's
sure.
why they try to classify somebody as a contractor.
We're just about out of time here, but what do you recommend for employers that have this question? Is somebody a contractor or an employee?
You need to contact competent employment law counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, my partner, Stacy DeKalb, you can reach her through me. She's great at it.
You can reach Jeff O'Brien at jobrien@lohman.com. Again, that email, jobrien@lohman.com. Kevin Hunter with Jeff O'Brien here on the Business Forum Show talking about workers' classifications. Thanks for listening.
HeideGrip.com.
What's HeideGrip, you ask? Here's Don Dorsch, creator and founder of HeideGrip.
HeideGrip is self-adhesive clear silicone strips applied to the underside of any strap where it normally lands on your shoulder. The HeideGrip strips grip onto any dry surface. Not only are they strong and tear-resistant, they are incredibly flexible and conform to your shoulder, yet sturdy enough for everyday use. HeideGrip won't damage your bag or clothing and is hypoallergenic. Add HeideGrip to your bag and it will stay on your shoulder. No more slipping, sliding, or adjusting. HeideGrip works on purses, messenger bags, baby bags, gym bags, backpacks, etc. Whether you carry a designer bag or a department store bag, they all slide down your arm. With HeideGrip, your bag will finally become hands-free. Now you will be able to shop and even reach for items with ease, knowing that your bag won't slide down your arm.
For more information, visit HeideGrip.com. Again, the website, HeideGrip.com. That's HeideGrip.com.
HeideGrip.com.
Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter on the Business Forum Show with a few thoughts on how your customers might be viewing your organization. When Bain & Company surveyed a number of businesses and asked how their clients would rate their service, the companies stated that 80% of their clients would rate them as superior. However, when the customers themselves were surveyed, only 8% of them gave these same businesses a superior rating. That's quite a gap, but it does serve to illustrate how little companies really know about what their customers are thinking. Can you afford to run your business without knowing what issues might be causing your customers to want to leave? Can you afford to be missing out on opportunities for growth simply because you aren't talking to your clients? Of course, the answer is no. So get started today talking to your clients. And if you're not sure how to put this together or construct it, give us a call at the Business Forum Show, 763-267-7260. Or look us up on the web, thebusinessforumshow.com. We'll be happy to hook you up with resources to help you get in touch with your clients today. Hi, I'm Kevin Hunter. As host of Business Talk Radio, I get the opportunity to cross paths with some very unique owners. Scott Favilla, the owner of Computer Rangers, is a perfect example of this. He founded Computer Rangers in 2005 after working on computers for the previous 15 years. Since then, he's acquired numerous certifications to become the expert that he is today. But that's just the beginning of his story. You see, Scott is a disabled Army vet. He was deployed to the Middle East and sustained injuries that kept him hospitalized for 6 months. This didn't stop him from attending St. Cloud State University and later starting his own business. Scott Favilla isn't looking for sympathy. When he talks about Computer Rangers, he pridefully states that customer satisfaction is his number one goal, and he works tirelessly to earn his clients' business through the quality of service he believes they want and deserve. This is the attitude that has made him a successful business owner today. Scott Favilla. Find him online at computerrangers.net or call Scott today at 763-245-6042.
You've been listening to the Business Forum Show, broadcasting worldwide on Blog Talk Radio, on Life 365, and on the TBFS Radio Network. On behalf of David Ford, Jeff O'Brien, and Allison Lindstrom, I'm Kevin Hunter. Thanks for listening.